Kia ora, I'm Tim Barnett. I was a Labour Member of Parliament in this place from 1996 to 2008. When I was elected, I was the only openly Rainbow Member of that Parliament, the 96 to 99 Parliament. I followed on from Chris Carter, who came out as an MP 1993, 94, and also from Marilyn Waring many years before. Probably I was the first MP to be elected, having been reported in the media before being elected as being gay. So that would be my part of the jigsaw. So that first 3 years, it was pretty lonely, and then life changed quite rapidly, particularly when Chris came back in. Georgina Beyer came in as well, and since then the Rainbow presence in Parliament has really increased immensely. My main political legacy, I guess, was around the Prostitution Reform Bill, where I was the sponsor of the bill. And obviously, as somebody who's gay, that story was pretty closely aligned to me with the way that people are marginalized because of their sexuality or their sexual behavior. So to me, as it would have been pretty hard for a straight male member of Parliament to sponsor that. For me, it was maybe that bit easier. So we went through that journey, and at the same time, the journey around civil unions began. And I initially, really at the behest of the then Prime Minister, Helen Clark, began a process of talking with Rainbow communities around what kind of model was wanted. And pretty clearly, there were two possibilities emerged. One was something that was politically feasible, which was as close to marriage as we could do, but wouldn't be called marriage. And that was civil union, and that won the debate. The other possibility was to go for marriage. And like things sometimes happen in politics, numbers are pretty important, and it was clear that marriage at that stage globally was just too new a concept to really be able to get through. So we went through an interesting debate on that one. The majority with civil union was only, I think, 10 votes, so it was a pretty tight debate. Looking back on it now, it's amazing that only a few years later, marriage equality went through overwhelmingly. So it showed the speed with which things were happening. New Zealand was the first country outside Europe to pass legislation giving equal status to same-sex relationships, and that was the real effect of civil union. The other issue about civil union is that at the same time as that went through, there was separate legislation giving equal status to marriage, to civil union relationships, and to de facto relationships, which arguably was the more radical of the two pieces of legislation, because it delivered on the principles of the Human Rights Act that said there shouldn't be discrimination on the basis of relationship status. So that went through, and then the last 3 years of Labour leading government, which was 2005 to 2008, the issues were a bit quieter. But I think a number of us who were leaving Parliament at that time were quite keen to get some kind of legacy to mark the journey, not just of those few years, but really the journey of the 20 or so years before that, where this place has helped to really forge leadership in public policy for principles which are now pretty mainstream. So having for the last 3 years, I was a senior whip, and so I got to be more within the committees and bodies in Parliament that actually make the decisions about the institution. Margaret Wilson, who was a speaker at the time, was a good colleague of mine. And as I looked around the corridor where the Rainbow Room is, I saw a room celebrating Māori parliamentarians, a room celebrating women, celebrating Pacific Island people who had been in Parliament. A room was set up to celebrate those from other ethnic communities, minority ethnic communities who had been in Parliament. It seemed to me that there was an obvious gap in that. And that was obviously people who identified as lesbian, gay, transgender, queer, rainbow. So that was the conversation that began. And as sometimes happens in politics, sheer force of argument can prevail. Margaret Wilson checked and I think found out that essentially it was up to the Speaker to denote these rooms. We identified this as being an appropriate place in the same corridor to continue the pattern of rooms, and that's where it all started. So not too long before Labour went out of power in 2008, there was an event in the Rainbow Room led by the Speaker involving all the former parliamentarians, current parliamentarians who identified as lesbian or gay, other parliamentarians who were supportive, people from the wider community, including the Māori performing lesbian and gay performing network. And out of that, the Rainbow Room was launched. At the time it was launched, we had a bit of a history panel, we had some works of art. Since then, I think it's we too to say it's kind of plateaued. What's inspiring now is it seems to be a real move on to give the Rainbow Room a bit of a refresh and a rehab, which it undoubtedly needed. Over the years, it acquired, I think, some more presentation material about how some of the big political battles were won, and it also had some works of art, one of which I think is behind me now, which denote the room very clearly. There's a couple of two or three observations, actually. One was that after I left Parliament, I wrote an email to all the new MPs in that 2008 intake from Parliament who I knew identified as lesbian or gay to say, it's your role to carry on preserving this taonga and develop it. And it's great to know that the room survived, because sometimes these things don't. Secondly, I remember my former colleague, Charles Chabelle, who continued through into that parliament, always when he was at a select committee meeting in this room, just making sure he expressed to the whole committee, containing many people who were not that supportive of what the room stood for, just saying it was really great to be in a meeting in the room that was there to celebrate him and his communities. And I've also noticed as I've wandered through Parliament in the years since I left that at least some of the guides actually do denote the Rainbow Room, which I think would be quite a surprise to many visitors. We could never find any example of another Parliament that actually had a room which was dedicated to celebrating LGBTIQ communities like this place, and they're linked through to the Parliament and to the wider political activity. I was elected towards the end of 96. As I said, I was the only openly lesbian, gay, transgender MP at the time. And there was a long discussion after that led by Winston Peters deciding what to do. And eventually he went with National. So Labour, by that time we were near Christmas, so the maiden speeches were early the next year. And an MP from another party in his maiden speech decided to use homophobia to try and get some people laughing. So I had a go at him in my maiden speech, which managed to grab a few headlines. The Evening Post at the time said that every New Zealand institution needed their gay pom, and I was the gay pom in the New Zealand Parliament. Never quite understood that, but it was their sense of humour, I guess. As I said earlier, it was a pretty lonely road, at least initially, to be the only person out in a place like this. I was pretty comfortable in myself and in my electorate, but here often the issues were tougher and it felt a bit more lonely. Brian Tamaki launched an attack on Georgina and I probably about 98, 99, where he preached with 4-metre-high pictures of us behind him, one about Georgina, one about me. He accused Georgina of being a murderer because she'd killed the man inside her to create a woman. And he accused me of, he told the factual side of my life. I'd immigrated with an Anglican priest as a partner to New Zealand, and I'd brought with me ideas about lesbian and gay rights that were very un-New Zealand, and that I was here to propagate them. And of course, the audience were cheering and booing, as any destiny can do. So that was an interesting one. At the same time, because I was quite an unusual figure, even in the Christchurch environment, there was a lot of there were death threats and there were feces in the post and a whole lot of the stuff which hopefully is less likely to happen now. None of which, I mean, my staff protected me from most of that, but it was not obviously not pleasant. And then when Chris and Georgina came back in and we got into government, the story of getting a bit more awareness in government of the issues became apparent. The initial one was that National had tried to remove government from the Human Rights Act so that we would be in a situation where government wouldn't be controlled by the principles of the Act, and I'd been the human rights spokesperson at the time. So we got that piece of legislation through, and then my focus was very much on the prostitution reform for a while, and then the civil union debate started. I chaired the select committee dealing with that, and we had 250 submitters. We had to have people in pairs who were either both for or both against, and 5 minutes each, and then 5 minutes of questions and on to the next one. So that was pretty intense, and in fact, even committee members who opposed civil union were quite shocked by the emotion and the spirit which came out in a lot of the submissions against, and the quite personal stuff about me because I happened to be there. There was an attempt by some MPs to remove me as chair because I had a conflict of interest, as they thought. But of course, the legislation was about creating a new status, and it would affect everyone. So we managed to defeat that argument. So that debate and the activity around it was probably politically a lot calmer than the prostitution law reform, and the vote was a little more certain at the end. But of course, during the Civil Union Bill, we had Brian Tamaki and 5,000 marchers heading up to Parliament, and the rainbow flag was flown outside until a security noticed, and that was quite an occasion. A gay couple I know who are together to this day actually met as counter-protesters on that day, so there's always a bit of a romantic spin-off to these horrible events. But that kind of really helped people to realise this was a hearts and minds debate, and I think probably the civil union debate helped to water down the opposition to marriage equality when that came through. Apart from that, I mean, I think New Zealand's alignment internationally with lesbian and gay rights, and I think the alignment of Parliament and the more progressive forces here with what's right in the world, I think those forces became more apparent as time went on. I remember with Margaret Wilson and a cross-party delegation visiting Russia in 2007 for a conference, and the New Zealand Embassy in Moscow, we invited the lesbian and gay activists who since been arrested many times there. So that kind of alignment of with what is right in this world is important, and I think this Parliament has been a place that has been prepared to lead on occasions, and that's a welcome relief. Oh, I think any room needs a refresh after a while. I mean, this place has now been here 10, 11 years, and I think its survival is the key thing. So great to see it surviving as an institution. And I think now these issues are even more central, and I think our human rights approach is more settled than it was 10 years ago. So this room getting refreshed, having the legislation on display, and also bringing in those elements of artwork and now for the first time actually deciding to have the images of the MPs who would identify with this room or what it represents. I think all that is immensely exciting. So congratulations to those who've had the vision and the energy to make that happen.